Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world, and welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I want to say thank you once again for taking time out of your busy life to join me on the broadcast today. Today is Monday, March 9th, 2020, and I am recognizing the incredible women of Iran today, celebrating International Women's Day 2020. Now, yesterday was officially International Women's Day, but of course the broadcast is not until today. But regardless of that, I want to take time on this broadcast today to reach out to the women that I have spoken about, that I have been a voice about for so many years in Iran. And these are fearless women, courageous women that have stood up against oppressive governments and have decided that their voices need to be heard. Now, on International Women's Day, we talk about equal rights for women. We talk about treatment of women in an honorable and respectable way. And, of course, that applies to women everywhere. But today I want to focus in on Iran because that's what my ministry is. That's what my calling is, to be a voice for women's rights in Iran. About a year and a half ago, I wrote and published a very important book that really is about this subject. It was entitled Broken Yet Beautiful, Rising Up from Their Ashes. Now, this book was mainly about making the argument that women can pastor in churches, that women can have significant leadership roles in churches, because the common interpretation of Scripture is that leadership is restricted by gender, male only, based on what many believe the Bible is saying about women being submissive, the man being the head of the woman. So I wrote a book in response to this issue, arguing for women to be treated with respect, that the gender issue should not be an issue, and that male hierarchy in the church should not be an issue either. And I argued that God does not look at gender, that we're all equal, and that He empowers all of us. But because today is International Women's Day, I'm not so much talking about issues in the church, although it certainly applies, but I'm talking about women fighting against oppressive government, women being oppressed, women being beaten, women being belittled and discriminated against, specifically in Iran. In the preface of this book, I want to take just a couple of minutes to read it to you because it pertains to International Women's Day. And I quote from my book, "In Greek mythology, there is the powerful tale of a legendary bird known as Phoenix. According to the legend, the Phoenix bird dies in a fiery combustion, and after a deep sleep in the darkness is suddenly rejuvenated, born again, rising up from the ashes of suffering, being transformed into a new life. The phoenix rises up victorious from the flames, overcoming the darkness, conquering death, and stands poised in a majestic stance, displaying its wings in a declaration of triumph over all obstacles. Like the legendary bird Phoenix, women today are rising up from the ashes of their suffering. Since the dawn of time, women have suffered discrimination and oppression in every culture of the world. They have been treated and trampled upon like second-class citizens, victims of false religion and misogynistic cultures. And so in the few paragraphs of the open of my book, I am arguing that although there has been oppression of women down through the centuries, for thousands of years, in Greek and Roman cultures, as an example, women are tired of this oppression. Women are tired of being treated like second-class citizens and are rising up against governments, against religions that oppress them. And so this is the whole basis for International Women's Day, recognizing that, like the Phoenix bird, women are rising up from their ashes. Thus the title, the subtitle of my book, Rising Up from Their Ashes. As I begin this day speaking about Iranian women, I want to recognize one very special woman from the past. Her name was Rahane Jabari. I wrote a book about her 4 years ago. Rahane was a young, successful Iranian girl who was taken advantage of by a surgeon or someone that claimed to be a surgeon. And this man, Morteza Sarbandi, lured her into an empty, dirty apartment and tried to rape her. And Rahane responded in that difficult situation like any normal woman would be, fighting for her life. She picked up a knife and stabbed him in self-defense. But for 7 years, because Rahane was born and raised and lived in a misogynistic culture, an Islamic culture that refuses to recognize the status of women, that refuses to recognize the testimony of women, for 7 years, she was beaten and tortured. They tried to force Rahane to recant and say this man didn't try to rape her. Why was that? Well, this man was a former intelligence agent, and his reputation was at stake. And Rahane was making this accusation that this man, this honorable man, tried to rape her. And the government did everything to try to change her story. And she refused to lie. And in the end, because it was a family matter, as they said, between two families, Rahane paid the ultimate price for her self-defense, and she was executed on October 25th, 2014. Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance, is the name of the book I wrote, and it talks about her struggle against an oppressive, misogynistic culture and how she paid the ultimate price because she refused to lie. And she maintained the truthfulness of her story to the end. She's well recognized and respected to this day all over Iran. But she is an example of what I'm talking about today. The current example, of course, is my dear friend Mary Mohammadi, trying to stand up for religious freedom in Iran and being attacked, persecuted, imprisoned. And she is a shining example of one young woman who dares to stand up against the Islamic culture and proclaim Jesus Christ as Lord. Another person that maybe you're not very familiar with that I want to use as an example today of women standing up against their culture. On International Women's Day, I want to recognize Farukhru Parsa. Farukhru Parsa was an Iranian physician, educator, and parliamentarian. She served as Minister of Education of Iran during the Pahlavi dynasty and was the first female cabinet minister of an Iranian government. Before Dr. Parsa was executed by the Islamic Revolutionary Guards, she wrote this last letter to her children from her jail cell. And here's what Farukhru said. "I am a doctor, so I have no fear of death. Death is only a moment and no more. I am prepared to receive death with open arms rather than live in shame by being forced to be veiled. I am not going to bow down to those who expect me to express regret for 50 years of my efforts for equality between men and women. I am not prepared to wear the chador and step back in history. Farouk Rue Parsa was born on the 22nd of March, 1922, in Qom to Farouk-din and Farouk Afga Parsa. Her mother, Fakhri Afga, was the editor of the women's magazine Jahan-e-Zan and a vocal proponent for gender equality and for educational opportunities for women. Her views on this subject met with opposition of the conservative sections of the society of her time, leading to the expulsion of the family by the government of Ahmad Qavam from Tehran to Qom and Farouk Rue's subsequent birth. She was sent to school and encouraged by her parents to become an educated woman. She proved to be a brilliant student at Houma Primary School. As the situation in the country had changed under Reza Shah, Parsa had the chance to enjoy equal rights, at least as far as education was concerned. With her parents' eagerness to educate their children, she continued her studies, even after she was married and bore children. After obtaining a college degree in natural sciences, she became a biology teacher in Tehran, and Farah Diba was one of her students. Her dedication to her job as well as women's rights promoted her to the school's principal position. She also used the school after hours to visit and teach women in prisons. She was admitted to Tehran University as a medical student and graduated as a doctor in 1950, although she did not practice medicine and preferred to work at the Ministry of Culture. She soon became active in politics and participated in parties that advocated issues such as women suffrage. Parsa, became a representative in 1963. On August 27, 1968, she became Minister of Education in the Cabinet of Prime Minister, thus becoming the first female minister in Iran's history. She was arrested after the 1979 revolution, after being out of office for 8 years, although, and even out of office, she remained an outspoken campaigner for women's rights. She was prosecuted in revolutionary court, headed by Ayatollah Khalali. She wrote in a letter sent to her family that she would not bow down to those who expected her to express regret for 50 years of her efforts for equality between men and women. Apparently, at the primitive court, she was given a last chance to repent, which she refused. Farouk Rue Parsa was executed on May 8, 1980. What an incredibly gifted, educated, powerful, courageous lady who refused after the revolution to change her mind. Another woman who refused. She refused to bow down to a misogynistic culture. Today, we honor and remember Farouk Rue Parsa of Iran. One other woman that will be featured in our new book, Shout Freedom, The Desperate Cry of Iranians, is that of Atna Daimi. She's very well known for her human rights efforts in Iran. The name of the article on my blog site, and which will be in the book, is entitled, I Stand for Life and Humanity. In Iran, remaining silent is what the evil regime prefers every slave of the dictatorship to abide by. However, one such brave woman refuses to obey this requirement, and her name is Atna Daimi. Atna is well known for her anti-execution campaign, and this is one of the reasons that she is treated so harshly by the government. Atna stands strong for life and humanity, which is the total opposite of this culture of death. She is passionate about fighting for women's rights, children's rights, and for the vulnerable victims suffering on death row. Even while in prison, she is busy writing letters to the government protesting against the inhumane conditions and letting her voice be heard all over the internet. Atna's father was alongside her when she was sentenced in the Islamic Court of Justice. Her father, Hussein, wrote, "I'll never forget when they brought Atna to court. Judge Mojishka, are you against execution? Atna, yes. I am against execution. Judge Mojishka, it's none of your business. We execute whoever we want, and those human rights people can't stop us. Atna, one day you will answer for those innocent people you hang, and that day is coming soon." Judge Mojishka expelled Atna from the courtroom and sentenced her to 14 years in prison. For more than 41 years, this evil regime has terrorized and murdered its own people. Atna has refused to remain silent, trying to restore hope and freedom to her homeland. In this never-ending battle against this dictatorship, Atna has also been fighting a very personal battle of her own. She has been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis while also suffering with persistent dizziness and numbness in her right eye. The medical physician in Qaqortoq prison requested that she be given an MRI to confirm his diagnosis, and the prison officials vehemently denied his request. In addition to her recent suspected illness, Atna has also been suffering with high blood pressure, kidney stones, and gallbladder problems brought on by hunger strikes. Atna Nile, 31 years old, has been behind bars since 2016, serving a 7-year prison sentence for meeting with the families of political prisoners, criticizing the Iranian regime on Facebook, and condemning the 1988 mass execution. Atna's parents are deeply concerned about their daughter and have been publicly outspoken to the international communities, begging human rights defenders to be her voice. Her mother longs for the day when she can once again hug her daughter in a free Iran. Atna also longs for the day when her homeland will be free from gender apartheid and its rules, and where women will once again be respected instead of being treated like second-class citizens. Hussein Daomi knows how courageous his daughter is and that she will never give up the fight. Atna is strong, and she will not give up against her oppressors. Well, despite all of her chronic health issues, Atna continues her fight against the dictatorship government. She has not lost her hope and envisions a free Iran on the horizon. Quote, "These arrests, detentions, threats, and intimidations are the sacrifices we need to make to gain our freedom and rights. We should never stop resisting or standing up against oppression. No victory comes easily, and no injustice lasts forever." Atna is shouting freedom while in chains. Do you hear her desperate cry? Stand with this fearless human rights defender and be her voice. Don't take your freedoms for granted. We have a responsibility to stand in solidarity with those who suffer. It is our duty to humanity. Well, speaking of standing with those who suffer, in the midst of International Women's Day, the media is reporting on a major event of refugees on the borders of Greece and Turkey. And this really concerns me because of the situation with the treatment of refugees. You want to see these pictures. The Greek government, they have used tear gas, beating, oppressing these refugees. Now, the 1951 Refugee Convention, which was adopted after World War II, defines what refugees are. They are those who are seeking refuge from persecution. And they give refugees a very important right to not be sent back home into harm's way except under extreme circumstances. Now, the EU-Turkey statement was signed in 2016 to end irregular flows of refugees from Turkey to the European Union in return of an interesting price tag, 6 billion euro, which the EU distributed or dispersed only half of this. Today there are close to 5 million refugees living in Turkey. So EU bought the peace by paying 600 euro for each refugee blocked in Turkey. After the killing of the Turkish soldiers in Idlib, Turkey decided to open the frontiers for Syrian and Iranian refugees to enter into Europe. Greek and Bulgarian forces began using smoke grenades and sound bombs to scare the arriving refugees. Syrians are headed to Europe by boats, cars, buses, and even taxis. So far, the ministry informed more than 36,000 refugees left Turkey. Southeastern borders of Turkey are the borders of NATO. Illegal crossings into Turkey can be allowed, according to EU, but cannot be allowed into Greece and Bulgaria because those are sacred EU borders. You can see horrific pictures, videos, and accounts of what's happening at the Turkey-Greece border. Greek forces are firing tear gas on babies and shooting at boats trying to capsize them in order to deter vulnerable people reaching the Greek islands and seeking protection. This abhorrent violence against a vulnerable group of people is taking place in Europe right now in the 21st century. It's shameful. It really has to end. We, all human rights activists, demand that the rights set forth by the Geneva Convention be upheld and protected. The world's failure to take meaningful action to protect Syrian civilians, Iranian refugees, where they live, the world's failure to properly address conflicts all over the world, the constant dehumanization and vilification of refugees can no longer be ethically or morally tolerated. The inhumane measures which the Greek authorities are taking to prevent people from entering the country are an appalling betrayal of Greece's human rights responsibilities and will put the lives of people fleeing violence at risk. Amnesty International is saying this to us today. Yesterday, following a meeting of Greece's National Security Council, the authorities announced they would temporarily suspend the registration of asylum claims from people who enter the country irregularly. See, the measure will be coupled with immediate return without registration of new arrivals if the return to their country of origin is possible. It's not clear how the Greek authorities are interpreting possible in this context. Everyone has a right to seek asylum. Deporting people without due process could mean sending them back to the horrors of war or exposing them to grave human rights violations, breaching the international fundamental principle of non-refoulement. This is according to Eve Getty, who is director of Amnesty International's European Institutions Office. A quote again from her: "The reckless measures being taken by the Greek authorities are a blatant breach of EU and international law that will put lives at risk. People seeking asylum are once again being used as bargaining chips in a callous political game." Greece also announced that from today, its armed forces will conduct exercises with live ammunition near the Evros land border and the Aegean Sea. Thousands of people have gathered at Turkey's land and sea borders since the Turkish authorities announced on the 28th of February that they would no longer prevent people from crossing there. They literally opened up the gate for these refugees to leave and go into Europe and cross over into Greece. According to reports, thousands of people have arrived at the borders of Turkey with Greece. Now, since last Thursday, clashes have been reported between Greek police and people at this land border, with the police using excessive force and indiscriminately firing tear gas into crowds to stop them from crossing into Greece. Meanwhile, arrivals have increased on the Greek islands, and yesterday, according to reports, locals on Lesbos prevented boats from coming ashore. They also attacked activists and the cars of volunteers and journalists. Amnesty is urging the Greek authorities to take all possible measures to protect people arriving in Greece and the organizations and the individuals who are on the ground supporting them. Quote, Greece must refrain from using excessive force and ensure search and rescue operations can operate at sea. People who are seeking asylum in Greece should be helped, not treated as criminals or a security threat, according to Eve Getty of Amnesty International. So you are witnessing this in the media. I've got lots of photographs, lots of videos on my page sent to me by my good friend Manoush, showing these asylum seekers, and they are being trampled upon. They're being treated as criminals. Now, you know, I understand, as an American citizen, there are rules for asylum seekers. You must go by a legitimate law process to be admitted. You just can't walk across the border. There must be paperwork. There must be a process. But as much as I can ascertain from what's going on, these thousands of refugees are being attacked and treated like criminals, and that is wrong. That is inhumane, and they should be treated as human beings. And this is what's happening at the border of Turkey and Greece. So we began our program today talking about the horrific discrimination and oppression of women. And I used a couple of good examples of women that I look up to as role models for women who are struggling against the system, against the religion of their country. And we ended the program today with talking about human rights and dignity for asylum seekers. That's what I do. I work with my Iranian friends who are in the process of fleeing Iran, fleeing the oppression and the dictatorship government, and in the process of coming to host countries as asylum seekers, going from asylum seeker to refugee and trying to find hope and freedom. And I spent a long time with my dear Iranian friend Manoush, supporting her, praying with her, writing letters to the immigration board, until finally last April, she was recognized by the immigration of Sweden and given a residency card. Now, she has to live up to that residency card by learning the language, assimilating into society. But the point is, I do this on a daily basis. I am always trying to do my best to support and speak out for my Iranian friends who are fleeing a dictatorship government. And they should always be treated with respect and not as criminals, like these refugees are being treated at the border of Turkey and Greece. Well, today we have learned that it is a fight. It seems like a never-ending fight against oppression and dictatorship. Today we have learned that there are strong, determined human beings, my Iranian women friends, that refuse to bow down to a system that treats women with such disrespect, that discriminates against women. Today on the broadcast, we have learned that this is a lifetime struggle. And Atna says it's not easy. Victories don't come easy, but she says something that's so true. Injustices don't last forever. And she's right. There's coming a day when the flames of democracy will be burning once again in Iran. I want to say God bless you and thank you, everyone, for listening to the broadcast today. I will see you again on Thursday on the Cross in the Desert.